If the church's liturgical year is important to us, we certainly must pay very close attention to this wonderful and glorious feast day. It comes around twice a year. We celebrate it on the second Sunday of Lent because it builds courage and strength for the journey to the cross. It is the revelation that Jesus is the Son of God, the chosen and beloved, who is about to die for his faithfulness to the Father. Today, though, on August 6th, it is in the context of ordinary time. Today, this feast shines the bright light of God's glory into the ordinariness of our daily lives. And in so many ways, it brings us into contact with God's entire plan for salvation of the world. In a manner different from most homilies, I want to go through Luke's account and pick out some of the key aspects of the Transfiguration, which may inspire us to realize how God is acting in history. First, Jesus took Peter and John and James with him up the mountain. It is clear throughout the Gospels that Jesus singled out those three, especially Peter, for leadership of his church. We weren't to be left with just the detailed memory, the details, or the memory of what happened. He put those human beings, and by extension, their successors, in charge of proclaiming Jesus, the beloved Son of God, the Father. So even today's second reading tells us that Peter took charge of the problem of correcting the errors of his day about the teachings about Jesus. And we still have this problem, and we still have Peter's successor, Pope Francis, charged with protecting the teachings of our faith. Next, it says they went up on the mountain to pray. Communion with God was Jesus' purpose for that journey, just like it is for us at Mass today. The mountain is up. It's upwards, towards God. This is the goal of all prayer, to bring us closer to God. Jesus does this constantly, and he reminds us to do the same. And then it says, and while he was praying, Luke subtly slips in that it is the prayer of Jesus which brings about or triggers the transfiguration to follow, not the prayer of Peter and his companions. They were falling asleep at the time of Jesus being clothed in glory, which reminds us of the same three falling asleep just at the moment which was contrary to his glory, when Jesus was about to be entirely stripped of his most basic human dignity. The appearance of his face changed. Jesus' divine nature now transforms his human appearance. Moses and Elijah appear in glory, but they only reflect God's glory. But Jesus takes on the appearance of his own divine nature. In addition to that, his clothes became dazzling white. Sounds like an advertisement for Tide. His clothes became dazzling white, even after all that walking around in a dusty desert. But Jesus is that very light that Peter, James, and John saw shining from his face that day and from his clothes. When this happened after the resurrection, no one recognized him. Mary Magdalene at the tomb, the disciples on the way to Emmaus, and the apostles fishing at the seashore. They weren't ready to be able to see and to recognize him through his glory, the glory which Peter and James and John saw directly before them. And then it tells us that they, Moses and Elijah, were speaking to Jesus about his exodus. At the first exodus from Egypt, the people were taken out of physical slavery, led by Moses. Elijah and Moses were speaking with Jesus about his exodus at Jerusalem, his journey to the cross and to his resurrection. The new and perfect Moses, Jesus himself, leads us out of slavery to sin, which condemns our eternal souls. This happens, of course, in particular at baptism, where we die with Christ and are reborn with him again through water and the Spirit. Then it tells us that Peter, James, and John, going back to them again, they were terrified as they entered the cloud. The Old Testament cloud in the desert marked God's presence amongst the people. The people, of course, were too afraid to enter it. Only Moses went in there. But now God brought them right into the center of his presence, even in the midst of their own terror. Following Jesus in prayer now becomes our path to the very center of God's presence. And then the words of God, "This is my Son, my chosen." At Jesus' trial, Pilate condemned Jesus to death, saying, "Behold the man." But on the mountain, God the Father declared, "Behold my Son, the chosen one." So these are just a few of the many rich aspects of our faith which can be seen if we prayerfully consider the transfiguration today in ordinary time. In his letter, Peter reminds us that the world usually does not experience or understand these things. In responding to some who were teaching lies, he says, "We did not follow cleverly devised myths when we made known to you the power and the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ." And he says something which is important for us. "We are witnesses of his majesty. We ourselves heard this voice come from heaven, and we were with him on the holy mountain." Peter himself heard the Father say, "Listen to him." Today, does this not give us great confidence? It is Peter, the one who was there, who confirms Luke's account. "I was there," he says, "and this is what I saw and I heard, and what I am telling you today again." He then tells us that we need to respond in some way to the transfiguration. Because of the cleverly devised myths of our day about our faith, the lies about Jesus and about Christianity, we can see the many ways that the world is asleep to the glory of God. The transfiguration shines into our hearts with the glorious light of Christ, the God who brings past and present and future together in his great plan of salvation. Peter, the rock, the first head of Christ's church, the first to hold Christ's own authority, says, "You will do well to be attentive to this as to a lamp shining in a dark place until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your own hearts." Today is the day when we witness the glory of God. There's nothing that we can say to add to it. It is a day to sit or stand or kneel or lie prostrate in front of its absolute majesty. There is no dwelling place that you and I can build for God, because he transcends all places. Where he really wants to dwell is in our hearts. That is where we must build a tent for him to dwell. Neither can we hold him in this present moment, because he is the Lord of every moment. Today's head of the church, Pope Francis, tells us, "Let us stay awake. With Peter, James, and John, let us go up today on the Mount of Transfiguration and kneel in contemplation of the face of Jesus to absorb his message and translate it into our lives so that we too can be transformed by love and into love itself."